All right, you guys, happy Wednesday. Sorry we're running late today. I'm starting homeschooling, so still getting adjusted to the new schedule. Where should we begin? Okay, well, Josh Hammer, because that's certainly getting a little more interesting, maybe a bit darker than we had anticipated, because just 16 hours before Charlie Kirk was assassinated, he mysteriously retweeted a 2013 tweet from Donald Trump calling for public executions. Now, I have tried, and I don't feel that there is any way that I can confidently explain to you guys why he tweeted that, least of all in the context of him having already admitted that he and a rabbi in Israel had a long talk with Charlie the night before he died, something he was very proud of. Also, Dinesh D'Souza has jumped into the mix. Welcome, Dinesh D'Souza. He is joining every commentator who hates Candace Owens. That's nice that he has entered the foray. He's got some things to say to me. We're going to discuss it because it's weird. And I'm also going to explain to you why, more formally at least, why I decided to activate an effective kill switch. And I want you guys to pay attention because this is really important. Welcome back to Candace. Hoisted by his own petard. That's an expression, obviously, that we use a lot. And I have this thing where I always have to go back and research and figure out why we use common expressions, because nobody actually thinks about those things anymore. Well, this one is pretty obvious. It refers to when soldiers would use a petard, essentially a bucket-shaped explosive device packed with gunpowder, effectively a bomb, to blow up the gates and wall fortifications of their enemies. They'd light the fuse, and sometimes, poof, they would be hoisted by their own bombs. And that's exactly what is happening right now to Josh Hammer. For weeks after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, Josh Hammer obsessively and shamelessly accused people of lying, people of grifting, people of attempting to destroy Charlie Kirk's legacy. Charlie Kirk was his friend, he claimed rather maniacally, that Charlie never once flinched on the topic of Israel. He died just loving Israel. It was like, are you kidding me? That's all he cared about. Check out just some of these tweets, by the way. This is a collage. We just don't have all day here to gather crazy Josh Hammer tweets, but you get the idea. There is a repulsive op right now to hijack Charlie Kirk's legacy. There is a repulsive op right now desecrating Charlie's memory by trying to posthumously convert him to Groyperism. I can't believe there's something known as Groyperism. I was given access to this letter a few months ago, and I read it at that time. Tucker, Candace, and other bad faith actors are lying through their teeth about Charlie and Israel. Candace Owens and other grifters, you get that back up for a quick second. Candace Owens and other grifters are trying to posthumously rewrite and hijack the legacy of the great Charlie Kirk to further their patently evil ends. Their has been a repulsive op. The reality is simple. Charlie was a bridge. Like, it's weird that he keeps repeating that sentence. Like I said, maniacal, obsessed. And of course, in the comfort of his own derangement and with the full support of the press and the silence of Charlie's other quote unquote friends, Josh was really acting the part of a true Pharisee. He was certain that the truth would not rise again. He was so confident that he had killed it and that he could himself hijack the legacy of Charlie Kirk. Except the truth did kind of rise again. It kind of always does rise again. And the world now knows that Josh Hammer had personal, intimate knowledge that Charlie's views were changing. He lied about the Hamptons meeting. I've told you the truth from day one. Seth Dillon and Josh were personally upset with Charlie's defiance against the state of Israel. Seth Dillon was the more vocal of the two parties in the Hamptons, as I said, in terms of actually pressing Charlie, but both of them were upset about the way that they saw his viewpoints shifting. And Tucker was therefore correct at Charlie Kirk's memorial. It was definitely the correct analogy when he spoke about these sorts of individuals who plot and lie and think that they are going to be successful in, well, murdering the truth in the story of Jesus Christ. Take a listen.
Charlie would have loved this, not just because he loved large groups of people, but because ultimately he was a Christian evangelist. And it actually reminds me of my favorite story ever. So it's about 2,000 years ago in Jerusalem, and Jesus shows up and he starts talking about the people in power, and he starts doing the worst thing that you can do, which is telling the truth about people, and they hate it, and they just go bonkers. They hate it, and they become obsessed with making him stop. This guy's got to stop talking. We've got to shut this guy up. And I can just sort of picture the scene in a lamp-lit room with a bunch of guys sitting around eating hummus, thinking about what do we do about this guy telling the truth about us. We must make him stop talking. And there's always one guy with the bright idea, and I could just hear him say, I've got an idea, why don't we just kill him? That'll shut him up. That'll fix the problem. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Everything is inverted, and the Beatitudes tell it, I think, the most crisply. Everything is sort of the opposite of what you think it's going to be.
That is a fact. It will always be the opposite of what you think it's going to be when you are attacking people who are telling the truth. And the truth is that it is now an established fact, like I said, that Josh Hammer knew that Charlie Kirk's perspectives on Israel were changing. And since that announcement, Twitter users pointed out a very strange tweet that Josh Hammer hit send on 16 hours before Charlie Kirk was assassinated. For no apparent reason at all, he retweeted something that President Donald Trump had sent a full 12 years ago about public executions. Here it is. Here is that retweet Trump wrote on April 19th, 2013. Should be public execution for all to see. You will end this bull fast. And Josh Hammer just replies and says, based, you can see. We are in Central Time, so that's about 9.05 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, what is the justification for this? There might be one. I tried in earnest to at first rationalize it, right? What could have been going on that Josh Hammer decided to dig through the 2013 Twitter archives and retweet someone calling for a public execution? Well, I'll let one of the many Zionist PR agents explain it first. Yashar Ali, who, like I said, is quite literally paid to do PR for Zionists. I know this personally on the right and on the left. Tried to explain it away by kind of lying, I would say. He tried to claim definitively that Josh was referring to the criminal who horrifically murdered the Ukrainian refugee, Irina Zarutska, in North Carolina. That was obviously a big story in the beginning of September. Yashar Ali wrote this. Last night, Candace Owens quote tweeted notorious neo-Nazi Sam Parker, who pointed out that Josh Hammer, who is Jewish and was a friend of Charlie Kirk's, elevated a Trump tweet from 2013 the day before, which called for public executions. Candace, of course, would like people to believe that Josh's quote tweet is suspicious in the context of the assassination of Charlie Kirk. But Josh was just sharing what many conservatives were sharing and stating the day before. That's because they were talking about the horrific murder of Irina Zarutska. This is where I say that no civilized nation uses the death penalty, in parentheses, referring to his own thoughts. Now, another user then jumped on that and tried to establish a non-fact that the footage of Irina's murder was released on that day, on the 9th, and that's why Josh tweeted that. All of this is factually untrue, okay? Irina was murdered on August 22nd. Her perpetrator was arrested that same day, and the footage was released and trended on X on September 5th. Josh himself sent multiple tweets regarding the homicide, as everyone did, because, like I said, it was trending. And when he was asked specifically about punishment, criminality, perhaps that her perpetrator should face, Josh, at no point that I could determine, whether he was on the news, whether he was on his own show or anywhere else, did he speak about the death penalty or, you know, a public execution. Instead, as you will see, and we will show you Josh in his own words, he spoke about the double standards surrounding the media coverage of her murder and really the topic of criminality more broadly and safety in America. Take a listen to what Josh said.
You know, Gabrielle, I'm a lawyer by training. And I remember my first year of law school back in 2013 when I was taking criminal law. This is kind of the beginning of kind of the left's kind of foray into so-called criminal justice reform. And even back then, There's a lot of chatter among my more liberal classmates about how, you know, incarceration and prisons and locking people up, you know, how all of this is just racist. It's kind of like a, it is an old kind of symbol of a white patriarchal colonialist imperialist society there, and how the ultimate goal is basically to defund the prisons. And then, you know, if some people are going to commit some violent crimes, you know, essentially let the chips fall where they may. Well, you know, this is letting the chips fall where they may. But most American people have not lost their minds. Most American people stand where Donald Trump stands, which is that they want basic safety. And
I don't disagree that we all want basic safety. I just don't hear him. And like I said, I've looked for it ever even calling for the death penalty in those days that were leading up. So I decided to do what I always do. Rather than say what he definitely meant or what he didn't mean, I decided to just create a micro timeline of Josh Hammer's tweets. And it gets pretty interesting on September 9th, the day before Charlie Kirk's assassination. This is what Josh Hammer tweeted. He tweeted a total of 9 times on September 9th. And you can gather what was going on that day from his tweets. He wakes up at 7:30 a.m., or rather pushes the first tweet at 7:36 a.m. And he tweets about a viral Phillies crowd scandal. This is an Eastern Standard Time, by the way. Right after that, he tweets a link, the one that I just showed you, to his media appearance about Irina Zarudska, where he does not call for the death penalty or anything close to the death penalty. 9:23 a.m., he tweets against Tucker Carlson because he has to do that at least twice a day, or I don't feel like he can get on with his day. 9:29 a.m., he tweets in favor of Israel and throws shade at Trump and Qatar. Not all of this is related to what went on September 9th, which is that Israel bombed Qatar for no reason, violating international law, which they tend to do a lot. But he, of course, was in favor of what they were doing. And so he throws shade at Trump and Trump's relationship with Qatar, because I guess it would be okay for them to violate international law if Trump wasn't friends with Qatar or something. 11:33 a.m., he tweets against Saudi Arabia because they came out and made a statement against what Israel had done. So he tweets against Saudi Arabia. And then at 3:00 p.m., he tweets against Tucker Carlson for telling the truth about Israel and 9/11. Again, he has to do that a couple of times a day. It's part of his ritual. 5:58 p.m., he tweets about the Hebrew Bible being the basis of Western civilization alongside a speech that he had given, tweets a link out. Again, promoting himself. 5:59 p.m., he tweets a promotion of his media appearance regarding a Supreme Court decision. And then there's this 3-hour break. He puts his phone down. Maybe this is a 3-hour break where he speaks to Charlie Kirk. I don't know, but I know that he speaks to Charlie Kirk at night. And then at 9:09 p.m., again, we're talking Eastern, Josh Hammer tweets in favor of public execution, and there's no context that is provided. So anybody telling you he for sure meant this or he for sure didn't mean this is a liar. We cannot know that. We cannot know Josh Hammer's thoughts. A couple of things that I want to point out. Josh is not saying in that tweet that he's calling for the death penalty. People calling for the death penalty, debating the death penalty, is a very common political debate. It's a very common political talking point. It is absolutely not a typical or a regular political talking point or debate regarding public executions. We don't talk about that often. It's an exceedingly specific ask, right? Usually reserved to a visceral response to something that you have seen and in the moment, right? Matt Walsh, actually, when we were prepping the show, I said, I will guarantee you that when that footage got dropped, which was on September 5th, 4 days earlier, Matt Walsh would have tweeted, this person should be publicly executed. And by the way, he did. He did. He said, we can't keep living like this. The only solution is ruthless punishment, public execution for violent criminals, long prison sentences, hard labor. This guy had multiple previous arrests. He should have already been serving 30 years in the labor camp. This is the only way, as our ancestors knew. We've tried compassion and restorative justice, and this is the result. It was inevitable. So Matt Walsh then went on his show and further explained that already contextualized tweet, and he explained how men have a visceral response when you see somebody being victimized, a woman being victimized in that way that Irina was. So we decided for good measure that we should check to see if maybe it was something regular that Josh Hammer also spoke about, which is public executions. And I can tell you that it is not something that Josh Hammer regularly tweets about or discusses. The first time that he tweeted about a public execution was back in 2013. And he said it in reference, I'm sorry, in 2022. And He said it in reference to the Boston Marathon bombing terrorist account. Oh, sorry, the Uvalde shooter. The Uvalde shooter is apparently dead, but just as with the Buffalo shooter, this level of pure evil would have been another ideal time for a public execution. So, to be clear, that makes sense, right? He is in the moment, and he is saying, I'm having a visceral reaction to the idea of another school being shot out, having another school shooting. And for that reason, I am saying that this would have been an appropriate scenario for a public execution. Emotions are running high. You are visceral, and you're learning things. You're seeing and you're learning those things in the moment. As I said, that would make sense in its context. I also want to remind you that Josh Hammer is a lawyer by training. He was at one point the editor at large of the Daily Wire, and he is currently the senior editor at large at Newsweek. Plus, he hosts his own show. My point that I'm making here is he knows how to communicate. Okay, this is not some random guy on Twitter who doesn't know that if you haven't tweeted all day about something, you can't just throw out tweets about public executions without contextualizing them, right? He certainly understands you don't just send out a standalone tweet at 9 o'clock p.m. and everyone's just going to go, what are you referring to? He knows the public is not going to comprehend what he means outside of him providing some further context. And I will also add here that it is not particularly helpful that Josh Hammer as an individual is obsessively angry. He is an incredibly angry little man. You can read through his tweets. He has openly expressed bigoted and prejudiced opinions against white people, okay? He does not view himself to be a white person. He views himself to be a separate race, Jewish. That is a fact, and it wasn't a long time ago. We don't have to go back to 2013 to hear his ideas on that. Here is a tweet from him in 2019 that he then erased regarding white people. Here's what he said. Jew hatred is inherent in the European DNA. Okay? Just like it's inherent. You're just inherent. If you're white, you're inherently guilty. You're inherently an anti-Semite. It's just you're born this way. It's just in your DNA. It's incredible that he said that. And in response, we were told that he meant it metaphorically, which kind of metaphor. Can you run that tweet again? I do know a little bit about metaphors and similes, and I'm not feeling Jew hatred is inherent in European DNA. How's that for a metaphor, guys, for you? Because I thought metaphor might be fire hair to describe somebody who's redheaded. Oh, no, it's not literally fire. It's fire red. No, I don't think a metaphor would be saying explicitly and literally that hating Jews is inherent inside of white people. I think it's amazing that he's even allowed, like there's just no consequence. It's like, yeah, well, editor at large at Newsweek, what are you going to do? Eh, it's fine. You can hate white people. We all know that. It's fine. Totally fine. Anyways, that's what he thinks about you guys. Full stop. And people are maybe perhaps because of that, because of how he regularly treats people and how he regularly attacks people and how vicious he is, are not feeling particularly charitable towards him, especially having been exposed as somebody who lied so audaciously and boldly and repeatedly and unnecessarily about the pressure that Charlie was under, pressure which Josh Hammer was a part of applying in the weeks and then in the hours leading up to Charlie Kirk's death. Saddens me that Charlie was stressed and Charlie was worried and that the very people that were stressing him out and making him have that sense of anxiety and worry, then you eulogized him and lied about all that. Why lie? That's the part that the public does not understand. How can we then trust a person that lies in that way? The natural thing is for us to then wonder, what else is Josh lying about? Would we trust if Josh came out and said that tweet was definitely about Irina? Other people pulled Trump tweets. Some did pulled that very tweet and called for a public execution. Would you trust Josh if he came out and said, I know I didn't contextualize it, and I know all day I was tweeting about Israel, but that one was about Irina? Don't forget, he proudly went around and he promoted to everyone that would listen that he spoke to Charlie the night before he died, probably in that 3-hour window. He bragged that he and Rabbi Wolicki had a Zoom call with Charlie. Why? Because they said Charlie wanted them to help him with his talking points about Israel. Now, I have to say, Charlie was one of the most skilled debaters ever, like literally ever. Any person that I have seen actually debating on stage, I learned my debate cues from Charlie Kirk. So it is very new to me to think that they scheduled this call because he was in need of tips on debating from a rabbi over in Israel and Josh Hammer. But let's be real. I have no proof to the contrary because I wasn't on the Zoom call. And Josh made it clear multiple times that in his last conversation with Charlie, Charlie, above anything else, was really interested in Josh's book. So much so that in his literal first tweet, after news broke that Charlie had in fact died, Josh manages to bring up his book. I'm not kidding. Here's his tweet. He writes this. I am speechless, devastated, and heartbroken. We spoke less than 24 hours ago. Charlie joked how he was going to plug my book on this very tour. He was a unique force, a generational leader. Pray for Charlie's beautiful wife and their young children. Rest in peace, warrior. And as you saw yesterday, Josh never forgets to plug his book. He never once forgot to plug his book. A few days after Charlie's death, he went on JTV, which is on the Global Jewish Channel, to discuss that call, that last call with Charlie further with a host named Ollie. And here is what Josh says about his book.
We actually did speak for the last time less than 24 hours before the assassination happened. We had a Zoom call, a friend of mine, him, a couple of his producers. It was a small call. We were literally talking above all about the anti-Israel questions that he expected to receive on this campus tour. And we were kind of talking him through talking points and strategy and how to deal with these expected hostile questions. And, you know, you held on my book, Israel and Civilization, Ali. The last words I think Charlie spoke to me were, he literally said, you know, Josh, you know, when the Israel question comes up, I'm just going to plug your book, you know, Israel and Civilization, because I think that what you write in the book basically is how I feel as well. And that ends up being the last time that we spoke.
Well, you heard him. It's like Charlie's final wish is for you to buy Josh Hammer's book. I mean, he's like, hey, he literally says, like, the last thing he said to me actually was like, I'm just going to plug your book. What he wanted to do on his tour was just to plug Josh Hammer's book. And it's so sad that he never had the opportunity to plug Josh Hammer's book. Now, let's keep with this interview because he's going to be asked more specifically about certain characters in the movement that are trying to, quote unquote, hijack Charlie's legacy by telling the truth. And remarkably, he is going to work. I swear he's going to work in his book again. Take a listen.
Precisely as you mentioned, there have been people who, like Ian Carroll, and it pains me to mention her name, Candace Owens, because I know how close she was, and maybe still is to Charlie. But at the end of the day, she's chosen to hijack his death right now to blame it on Israel. I mean, it's just so disturbing. But then you have the people who are sort of a bit more in the middle. Maybe I wouldn't even say in the middle, but they're teetering a bit. The Megyn Kellys and the Michael Knowles and others kind of in this in-between. What do you think is going on there with them?
Yeah, look, I mean, we can talk about every commentator one by one, but I think it's kind of easier to make a few kind of generalizations, right? I think a lot of folks are kind of just trying to take their commentary to where they see the perceived momentum, especially among the younger generation there. But so I think a lot of it is trying to kind of, you know, stick your finger in the wind and try to see, you know, where Gen Z is. And also really, I mean, above all, see kind of just where the Twitter algorithms are right now. I mean, it's very hard to look at someone like, let's take Matt Gaetz, okay? Matt Gaetz was a former Republican congressman from Florida. Now he hosts a show on One America News. Matt Gaetz and I were very friendly for a while, okay? He had me on his show back in March when my book came out. Ollie, he referred to my book as a battle map to save Western civilization. It was an extraordinarily kind segment. He was asking very intelligent questions. He clearly had read the book. He was engaging with the material in it there. And a few months later, you know, he's talking about Jewish supremacy, you know, a term that has kind of like Der Sturmer origins, and he's had all sorts of horrible guests. I mean, does someone like that like actually flip that quickly based on like literally from March to June or July? No, of course not. I mean, it defies common sense. It defies reality. That's obviously not what's happening there. I think it's just profound cynicism. It's trying to kind of just play for clicks, play for money, and trying to kind of generate some viral clips to appease a small but very vocal and very online segment of the American right and of the American internet user base there.
I just love that he doesn't even blink as he goes from promoting his book again to then accusing people of wanting money. It's just incredible as he's completely grifting off of Charlie's death by trying to promote his book as like Charlie's last wish. It's really amazing. Also, why does Michael Knowles randomly catch a stray? Like, what's Michael Knowles been up to that he's like now on their list? Michael Knowles, Megyn Kelly, they're listing them. That's coming next. Okay. Inevitably it comes inward. And I just also want to be clear in case what he's saying is not registering to you correctly. So white men, to the extent that you are willing to get out there and work to serve really his book, to sell his book, to serve his interests, which are very clearly Israel, you're cool. You know, no one's going to call you an anti-Semite. Everything can be cool. To the extent that you, I don't know, maybe don't want to do that, you will be ruined. Matt Gaetz, what was he thinking? It's crazy. Like, what on earth was Matt Gaetz thinking? It was great when he was out there pitching Josh Hammer's book, and now he can't be saved. But then, and this is where it gets important, Josh Hammer gets even more specific, addressing the question if Charlie was beginning to crack on his support for Israel. Let's not forget, we already know the answer to this is yes. So looking at this hindsight 2020 really is something. Take a listen.
If he is what, or if he was going in a direction that Candace Owens and others say he was going in, you know, very, very simple point. Would he have had on me and our friend Rabbi Pesach Wilicki literally the night before his death to spend an entire hour talking about how to respond to anti-Israel talking points? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It literally simply does not make sense. His heart was absolutely in the right place. Again, he was trying to navigate kind of some very choppy waters, though.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense. Charlie was just on the phone looking for talking points, trying to navigate some choppy waters with how he was going to address these kids that had some questions about Israel. He was unflinching, but he gratefully had Josh Hammer's book and wanted to go through it and make sure that he remembered everything. Now, this is probably also a great time, referring to that little conference call they had, whatever it was, a Zoom call, to tell you that that rabbi, Rabbi Wilicki, was also on the now infamous text chain. So this means that both of those individuals knew exactly where Charlie was at on the topic of Israel and how he felt leading up to that moment of his death. And again, like I said, 2 weeks before that in the Hamptons, they knew where he was at. Tucker Carlson told you the truth on his stance on Bibi Netanyahu. Nobody wants to address or answer the question of whether or not when Bibi Netanyahu invited him to Israel, what the context was of that. Do you think that guy who's fighting a 140,000 front war because he keeps picking fights and pretending he's a victim really just has time to pick up the phone and shoot the breeze with Charlie Kirk, whose number, according to the released letter, he didn't even have in May? So what's he calling them about? They obviously weren't close if he didn't have his number, okay? So what's he calling Charlie about? Why is he inviting Charlie to Israel 2 weeks before he dies, right? Nobody will address that Charlie said no. He did. He said no. He didn't flinch. He wasn't even flinching. He was just busy and couldn't make it out to Israel or something. Now, I will say that regarding Rabbi Wilicki, I think he has more of a conscience and soul than Josh Hammer. I haven't seen him promoting his book. He doesn't lie as audaciously and as repeatedly and tweet nearly as neurotically as Josh Hammer does. But I want you to listen to what he had to say when asked whether or not Charlie was turning on Israel. Give us our hindsight 2020, Rabbi Wilicki.
The wild conspiracy theories online, wild, on social media, claiming that Israel and the Mossad are behind the assassination of Charlie Kirk because he was turning on Israel. Now, you spoke to him just hours before his death. Did you feel that that was the case, that he was, in fact, turning on Israel?
Look, Lidar, I was in touch with Charlie on an almost daily basis for months, and he certainly had some disagreements with Israeli policy, and he criticized Israel where he felt appropriate. He sometimes believed things like a lot of people do that are out there in the media. And that was really the substance of our relationship, was checking on things and finding out the truth. But that doesn't mean that he was immune to the negative sentiments that were out there. And there were a lot of people around him in the America First movement who were actively working on him to try to get him to turn on Israel. But the real answer to your question is the meeting that I had with him. And the entire purpose of the meeting, called by Charlie, Charlie called this meeting, and it was on our schedule for weeks, was that he was going out on a campus tour. Utah was the first stop on his new campus tour. And what a lot of people in Israel do not realize, or in the pro-Israel community do not realize, is that between 40 and 50% of all of the questions and challenges that he would get on these campus tours were usually about Israel. Because the campuses, of course, have a lot of anti-Israel sentiment, and Charlie was known as a supporter of Israel. So he ended up being in a position where he was defending Israel all the time. And it drove him crazy because he wanted to talk about America, but he was defending Israel all the time. So in preparation for this new campus tour, he called a meeting of a few people that he trusted to talk about Israel issues and to anticipate the questions that he would be getting, the challenges that he would be getting on this campus tour, and to make sure that he had the truth and that he could formulate answers that he was comfortable with. If Charlie had turned on Israel, why would he even bother with a meeting like that? Why would he call a meeting with a few pro-Israel friends of his to talk through Israel issues, to make sure that his facts were straight and his talking points were straight so that he could defend Israel better? If he was turning on Israel, he would have had Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson in the meeting planning to throw Israel under the bus. The entire premise of the meeting refutes that theory.
How are you feeling about that? Now that you know that Charlie actually mentioned both Tucker and Candace 48 hours earlier as they were trying to do what they always do, which is control who he's allowed to speak to, control who I was allowed to speak to back when I was within the Zionist movement and waking up and realizing something was dangerously wrong when they started to try to control my voice. It's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable to reflect on that. Now, I will say again, Rabbi Wilicki, more of a soul. He's at least acknowledging that something was going on, right? I don't think he would have been comfortable pulling the jaw. She was great. It was amazing. Buy my book, right? He loved every second. He's amazing. Oh my God. He wished he could have gone over. The one thing that hurt Charlie Kirk the most was that he would never be able to wear an IDF uniform. He just wanted to go fight for Israel. That's kind of the vibes that they were trying to put out there. At least Rabbi Wilicki is like, he was under some pressure, okay? He's saying it softly, but he's like, he was kind of needing to have a conversation to say he's not comfortable answering these questions anymore because he doesn't feel this way anymore. He realizes something is wrong. I told you he was particularly worried that Israel was infringing upon speech in America. I have text messages to that effect, okay? So there's no undoing that. He was aware that they had lost the PR war, and it was weighing on him that he was seen, as Rabbi Wilicki accurately states, as this person who just defends Israel, especially when what they are doing is so plainly immoral. It was starting to fracture people's viewpoints of Charlie, right? And Charlie, like I said, when he got into this, like when I got into this, we were genuinely pro-Israel. There was nothing, there was not payment that was coming in. Was I ignorant? Yes, I've owned that 1,000 times. I thought it's not a relevant topic and it seems, makes sense. You know, the low-hanging arguments make sense. Why can't they have their own country? Whatever. My focus was BLM. He was always genuine. And I think, as I've said, he was genuinely over it towards the end because of Jewish behavior. His words, not mine, leaning into the stereotypes of Jewish behavior, okay? He didn't want to be bullied. He was being bullied. They knew that he was being bullied. And yet they want us to believe that less than 48 hours before he died, Charlie announces that. He announces that he has no choice but to abandon the pro-Israel cause because of Jewish donors and their behavior, living up to these stereotypes. And despite this frustration, 48 hours earlier, the following day, he decided to have that smaller audience with two Jewish individuals who were on that chat and were aware that he was angry. But this conversation was not going to be a follow-up or in relation to what he had just expressed hours earlier to them both, but rather, he was just like a super fan of Josh's book. He he's like, gosh, this book is amazing. I want to get on the phone with the author. What a wonderful opportunity to speak to the author. I love this. Tell me how to come up with this idea for the book. I want to hear more. And also, I'd like to strategize on how to deal with the questions that are coming at me using and promoting your book. That's what Josh wants us to believe, at least, right? And then we're supposed to believe that he had that dramatic switch. So he went from, I'm done, to like, hey, love ya. How can I be of more service to you? And then in that exact same day, he was texting people saying, they are going to kill me. On the same day that he's on this Zoom call, this is a fact, this night Zoom call, as Josh says, it was at night, or the New York Post reported, I think, right, that it was at night, that at the same time, that same day, he's texting people saying they are going to kill me. And we are supposed to deduce from this that by they, what he really meant was Tyler Robinson. He meant they, them, duh, like a non-binary person or a trans person. They were going to kill him. That was what he had a feeling about. And everything else is just completely irrelevant. He just had a sense, a premonition, that a trans person was going to get him. Do you believe that? Do you buy any of that? And I want to say this. I was speaking to somebody earlier about how interesting it is that none of us, and when I'm saying none of us, I'm talking about Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, myself, when we were speaking honestly and accurately about what Charlie was going through and how he was being bullied and how he was under pressure. And Megan even spoke about it herself, by the way, Megan, you should probably tell people who those individuals are. We never once said that Israel killed Charlie Kirk. I've never said that because on the basis of the facts that you guys are following on the show, I don't have any evidence of that. It doesn't serve me to make up a narrative that I can't prove, right? Why would I say that? But what I will say is that I am uncomfortable with how many lies people that support Israel have been telling in the wake of his death. That has been almost the only compelling argument that Israel had anything to do with it is the way they're acting right now. Like Bibi Netanyahu, the propaganda, the lies, the coming after Candace Owens. None of this was necessary. Nobody thought when this first happened, this is 100% Israel. 100%. This happened in Mormon country. How come there were no Mormon people, no Mormon presidents coming out and saying, I just want to be clear that we didn't kill Charlie Kirk 24 hours after he died? Because that's what Bibi did. How come there were no Mormon people that started Operation Mormon Pastor or President feeling the need to baselessly attack me? I was actually on the Mormons. I've been on the show calling them out by name, saying who was doing what. Mormons were not offended by that at all. Because they want to know if somebody is corrupt and had something to do with this. They want to know if their church was involved in this. That's a normal response. Not to say it definitely wasn't us, but rather to say, I'm on this journey. I want to know who killed Charlie Kirk too. And I'm therefore going to support Candace's efforts to find out. Exact opposite of what Israel is doing, right? That is the one disturbing fact about people that support Israel. Their behavior, to put it in a way that Charlie put it. Take a little bit of a break here and throw it to some of our sponsors. I always tell you guys about Riverbend Ranch because I love their steaks. Black Angus beef, famous for its great flavor. Riverbend Ranch has taken the Black Angus beef to a whole new level. Over the last 35 years, the ranch has been creating an elite Angus herd by using ultrasound technology to select genetically superior cattle with a focus on flavor and tenderness. Each year, Riverbend Ranch provides about 850 elite Black Angus bulls containing these special genetics to over 260 Western U.S. ranches. Those partnership ranches receive a substantial premium from Riverbend Ranch for raising those calves without the use of growth hormones and without antibiotics. And every fall, the calves containing these elite genetics return to Riverbend Ranch to spend the following summer in lush mountain pastures. When you purchase from Riverbend Ranch, you are not only supporting the 64 cowboys and their families who work on the ranch, but you are also supporting over 260 other U.S. ranches and the hundreds of American families who work on those ranches. It's born in the USA, it's raised in the USA, and it's processed in the USA. Their meat is aged to perfection for 21 days, shipped directly from the ranch to your home. This is not your average Black Angus beef. It's more flavorful and more tender than even the best Angus beef that I've ever tasted. And right now, when you head over to riverbendranch.com and use promo code Candace at checkout, you'll get $20 off your first order. Trust me, you are going to be very impressed. So head to riverbendranch.com and use promo code Candace. Also, telling you guys about the Comet AI browser, because we all spend a lot of time every day on the web. How much time do you click around while you're on there? Searching, scrolling, typing, endless tabs, which is a lot. But there is a new AI web browser from Perplexity that's called Comet, and it is completely changing the way that you interact with your browser. Using Comet feels a bit like having a personal assistant living in your web browser that can actually do things for you across the web, doing things literally, not just giving you answers. You can ask Comet to do things, and it can click, type, search, scroll for you. And what I love most about Comet is that it can take the weeknight chaos and turn it into something more simplified and stress-free, like a dinner. With just a few taps, you can get a personalized meal plan that's based on your family's preferences. Comet orders the groceries for me, and it gets them delivered right to the door. Comet can shop for you, make reservations, book travel, summarize articles or videos, send emails, schedule meetings, and a lot more to make your life easier. So go and take back your time online. Download Perplexity's new web browser, Comet, and let it work for you, not the other way around. Check it out at pplx.ai/Candace. That's pplx.ai/Candace. And also remind you guys about Just Thrive, because I love them. The biggest health secret that is not talked about and everyone's waking up to is the fact that everything starts in your gut. Every day your gut is fighting a silent war against processed food, work stress, toxins in the air that we're breathing. When your gut is in trouble, your whole body feels it. Most probiotics do not work. 99% of traditional brands die in your stomach acid before they reach your gut, which is what makes Just Thrive spore-based probiotic completely different. Just Thrive is the only probiotic that is clinically proven to arrive 100% alive in your gut, which means it does something that no probiotic can. It turns your gut into an antioxidant factory, creating protective compounds exactly where you need them most, which means better digestion, healthy immunity, more energy, easy weight management. You can take Just Thrive probiotic in the form of a capsule or berry-flavored gummy. From their award-winning probiotic to their full line of gut, immune, and brain health supplements, Just Thrive has been fighting to make Americans healthy again with science-backed solutions that you can trust. So if you want to join that gut health revolution and take control of your health today, visit justthrivehealth.com and you'll save 20% with promo code Candace. You'll see the difference yourself, or you'll get a full product refund, no questions asked. So take control today with Just Thrive. Again, that's justthrivehealth.com, promo code Candace at checkout. Okay, first I want to put out, I think cops called an APB. What does it actually stand for, Mark? I'm not all points bulletin. See, you're never too old to learn something. And of course, Mark knew that instantly. All points bulletin. Mark has got a lot of random facts about every subject up there in his brain. We're not really sure why. First order of business, I got to put out this all points bulletin. I'm looking for footage on UVU campus, some particular footage from people that were there that day. And I want to be real specific here so we don't clog up the inbox, because obviously when you send footage, it's a bigger file. I'm looking for video footage of any older males, okay? Any older males that day that have long hair that was up in a ponytail or a bun. So if you are a UVU student or you know someone who was a UVU student, please send this around and ask people to send me their footage. I just want to see footage of men that have their long hair, enough hair that it's up in a ponytail or a bun. There is, of course, a specific reason why I'm asking for that. Also, there, in me scouring the earth for every piece of footage, there's an almost incomprehensible lack of footage that is coming from the left side of Charlie, meaning if Charlie is facing the crowd, it would be his left side. So we have gone ahead and highlighted for you where I am looking for footage from, okay? I can't find footage from this section. Chris, if you could go back to that first one again too. This section right here, if you were sitting here or go to the next one, all on the side, when the shots rang out or just before, you know, maybe in the 10 minutes before, so I can see who was around or what happened when those shots rang out, it is weird. There's just it's like a black hole. Cannot get footage of that angle from the front. You're probably going, well, doesn't Turning Point have that footage? Well, Turning Point, as we have learned, is not going to show anybody anything in 4K or in 5K. I think because that would be helpful or something. So we have to do it this way, the organic way, which takes much more time. You know, I do want to say this as well. You can send that, by the way, to tips@CandaceOwens.com. We also have more tips at CandaceOwens.com. And please just put in the subject line, footage at UVU. That would be very easy. It would help us sort things. We've kind of been cleaning up the inbox. Again, more tips at CandiceOwens.com or tips at CandiceOwens.com. You know, somebody I was speaking to earlier today was speaking about, you know, the anxiety that Turning Point is going through. I do want to say this first and foremost, because I felt this way at previous companies. They are amazing people that work at Turning Point USA, the overwhelming majority of them. And that's what sucks when it, corporate, people at the top take a direction. Those people get no say, right? This investigation is being assisted by Turning Point USA, not the execs, but Turning Point people on the ground, people that they don't even think about, smaller employees. Like, they deeply care about what has happened. They deeply care about finding answers regarding what happened to Charlie Kirk. And so we never want to paint a broad picture that this is Turning Point. The top is most certainly not the bottom. And somebody was saying, you know, what if this, what you're doing destroys Turning Point USA? And I said, you know what? This is what I always say. If the truth is capable of destroying your company, the truth, then does your company deserve to exist? Think about that. If I'm like, if people learn the truth about how Candace Owens treats her employees, Candace Owens isn't going to have a career. If people learn the truth about what Candace Owens does in the weekends, it will destroy her career. Like, that probably means that you're not a good person or you're not a good company if the truth is a threat to you. I've heard this argument over and over. I've never been fearful. And obviously, I'm kind of constantly going through a public x-ray, a public x-ray of my life, people examining. I'm never fearful because I think I'm a decent person, right? I live honorably. Do I make mistakes? Yes, I own my mistakes immediately. And I will be very quick to apologize to people when I get things wrong. But I'm not an evil person. Nowhere near an evil person. And I always try to be honest. And so do not concern yourselves with people that feel threatened by truth, right? That's ridiculous. Anyway, speaking of which, obviously you can see right now the Zionist lobby hates me and Tucker Carlson. It is like nothing anybody has ever seen in their lives. This past year, they've really upped the ante on trying to destroy me and Tucker Carlson. The hatred is deep. It's sinister. It's evil. And they have sent virtually every foot soldier that they have available to attack us repeatedly, right? Attack us repeatedly, make videos. People, it's confusing. What is it? Is she lying? Why is she saying this? Is this the right time? It's actually getting quite boring, I think. It's a little boring. I would almost describe their strategy as blitzkrieg. I don't want to be accused of being a Nazi for using these two German words, blitzkrieg. But it has been something like bombardment. And this morning, they sent out Dinesh D'Souza after me. It was very, very convincing, by the way. He sent out a tweet to convince people that they shouldn't watch me. He said, "I can't comment on Candace because it's quite obviously a freak show. It's like driving on the highway and seeing a farmer having sex with a sheep. You don't want to look, but you can't look away either. The problems begin when you try to analyze it. It is what it is." And I love that Yashar Ali replies and says, this is what I mean. These are the people who are supposed to be combating Candace Owens. Instead, they tweet stuff like this. Yeah, hi, Dinesh. Kind of weird, man. We cannot relate. I got to tell you, if I ever was in this awful scenario where I saw a farmer trying to have sex with a sheep, I feel very much that I could not only look away, but I could call the police, okay? So if that's kind of what you're selling, you know how, like, when you can't look away from bestiality? Dinesh, we want to know your opinion on me, not what's on your laptop and how they maybe blackmailed you, okay? That's not what we're interested in, Dinesh D'Souza. And he's like, well, I meant that as a joke. You didn't mean it as a joke. You meant it seriously, and it was weird. It got weird very quickly. And we learned more about you than we learned about me. That seems to be the circumstance. It's like a complete boomerang. But yeah, they're really starting to scrape the bottom of the barrel and finding people that are in some weird stuff. So I would say, I think Dinesh D'Souza, if he thought that that was going to be relatable and convince people, yeah, I totally relate. Yeah, it's like, you just can't look away from that stuff when you see it. That did not happen. Now, because they are seriously increasing and being, I would almost say, erratic in their behavior, obsessive, erratic, neurotic, there is a real risk here, right? I do not accept, and neither do you guys, that Charlie Kirk lost his life because he really pissed off the trans lobby. It terrifies me to think that on the day that Charlie died, I got multiple phone calls from people who said that me and Tucker should lay low because we're also on the list. And they never told us who specifically told them that, by the way. Now I'm wondering why they never told us who specifically told them that. I called Tucker. I'm like, I'm hearing, are you hearing the same thing I'm hearing? They're saying that we're next. And now I go, was that supposed to be a threat to me and Tucker? To have us watch the public execution of a friend of ours and then to call us and to say, you should lay low for a little bit because you guys, we're hearing that you guys are on a list. Was that just supposed to be a threat? Because why wouldn't you be more forthcoming with exactly who you heard that from? And I said, I remember saying, I was like, did the feds say this? Who said this specifically? Because why aren't they calling me and Tucker? Why am I calling Tucker and telling him about this? And I did. He will tell you that. The day that Charlie Kirk was shot, this really happened. And I'm coming out of the grief stage and realizing I think that was an element of this. To send a signal, to shoot him in the throat, right? To say, we took out his voice and we will take yours out too. And that's terrifying and that's real. And these people that we are fighting are dangerous, okay? Do not underestimate them. They are dangerous and they are haughty and they are growing increasingly desperate, and panicked people that are evil in this way are not people that you want to play with, right? People are nervous. Everyone is feeling it. And that's why I decided that I don't know what's going to happen. Okay. I don't know how many days I have on this planet. I do know what I'm fighting for. And I do know that this life is not it. It's not. I'm telling you guys, it's not. The people that want you to believe that it is, people that pulled you away from your faith in the first place, as I'm trying to demonstrate to you, did it because they knew they could further enslave you. They want you to be fearful of death. They want you to think it's it. They want you to think it's lights out and then everything is over and that you are not a soul, right? Because then they can get you to do things to guard what you have in this world. Follow their rules, to do things that you know are wrong because you need the money. It indoctrinates you into their matrix. What I wanted to do, as I discussed yesterday, and which got picked up, was to create a kill switch, right? To realize that Kanye was kind of right. Never too late to say that Kanye was right. Kanye said that in order to be free, you had to violate these contracts. You had to recognize that your voice is being controlled. And Kanye did just that. It was really an act of bravery to free himself. But I have no doubt that the same people that were torturing Kanye, the same people that were torturing Charlie Kirk, if Kanye died today, would be the first to eulogize him. I feel that. I do. I feel that. And I think it's important to share that information, as Kanye sent me all the messages of people who were threatening him. I have them all. To information share with Max Blumenthal, with people, people all over the place, to send a package and say, if anything happens to me and it looks suspicious, release it all, you know? It's not even about having an opposite and equal reaction. I want it to be an unequal reaction. I want it to be a mistake because it catalyzes people waking up and learning exactly how this matrix works. And Alex Jones, I brought this up on his show, my kill switch. Here's what he had to say.
Boy, does she lay the traps for him. She comes out and says, yeah, Charlie was calling me, wanting me out of his events, you know, again and all the rest of it. And he was also really concerned about the Israel lobby coming after him. And they said, you're a liar. Charlie doesn't like you. Charlie didn't like you. Charlie didn't call you. He didn't text you. And so she let him say that for a few weeks and then released it, the text. And then she said, yeah, he was really upset with the Israel lobby and said he was breaking with them entirely. He wouldn't be bullied by them. In the weeks before he was killed, they said, you're a liar. That's not true. So she released those 2 days ago. Now she says she has the proof, and it's text messages, that he feared for his life in the 2 days and the day before he was killed. And predictably, they're already saying it. She's a liar. And then she's going to release those. And she's also sent out the dead man switch, just like James O'Keefe did to myself and a few others right before he released the stuff on Prince Andrew, which is dangerous, by the way, proving that he indeed raped the girls and cover it up. People are like, we already know that. How's that daring? Oh, you're going to release the total proof on the King of England's brother? Yeah, that's dangerous. So those of you saying O'Keefe doesn't risk his life and all the stuff he's been through and been arrested and indicted and raided, try putting on his shoes for a while before you sit around and say that he didn't do anything. Man's a champion. But the point is that this is a real dead man switch. She has sent out it to the Tate brothers, Dave Smith, Max Blumenthal, Tucker Carlson, and others. Well, I'm trying to get her on for weeks. I'm a little bummed out she didn't send it to me. Because I'd like to stand with her, but we do stand with her. So they're already out saying she's a liar. She's going to release that. Now, this doesn't prove Israel killed him or a lobby around that. Because I've seen no evidence. You know, they said his security detail was Israeli. They weren't. It was just the first knee-jerk reaction. I said, you can certainly say Israel's a suspect, but I said, I need to see proof. We need to figure out the ballistics and who really shot him and all that before we then, you know, start saying, okay, you know, motive. I mean, you can always look at motive, but first, with the forensic situation, are they covering it up? What's the ballistics? That's just where I am. I'm not going to just say something because people think it. But when she releases this, she's got it. Make no mistake. Just like she keeps bringing the goods, and she just sets the hook with the worm on it or puts the mousetrap out with the cheese on it, and they come out and say, you're a liar. And she goes, boom. You're a liar. Boom. You're a liar. Boom. You're a liar. Boom. Bam. So, and she'll let them, you know, for a week or so kind of stew and say she's a liar, and then she'll just release it. And then what she's saying is, you kill me, it doesn't matter, it's coming out. And the word is, he specifically thought Israel was going to kill him. Even Michael Savage, first a few months ago, said, Netanyahu needs to go on my show. During the break, he goes, man, I hope Mossad doesn't kill me. Cruz saw it. It was on the feed. He didn't say it was off record. It was during the break. So there are a lot of groups who want Charlie killed. He was defeating the Democrats with TPUSA, got over 2.5 million people to vote conservatively for Trump, was moving the needle big time, more than anybody with young people on colleges. So I see them as the motive, and they said, we want Charlie dead. And they said, you know, they celebrated when he was dead. He had like 6 Trantifa. Say, Charlie would be dead tomorrow. Then they said, see, we told you. And that was in the town. So, you know, we got Trantifa, the tranny Antifa, running around engaged in all sorts of violence everywhere. So go. I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, that fits.
So you get the picture. I mean, I think, and he goes on to explain how we all feel, which is like genuinely we had no proof and no rhyme or reason to think or suspect Israel whatsoever. And it's really just been this insane behavior of covering up and lying that makes us question things. Like, that's the reality. And by the way, questioning things doesn't mean that we have any proof that that happened, which is why we've been actually reticent to say that. But they're not acting right. And gut means something. They're not acting right. None of them are acting right. And that's not just Turning Point USA execs. And I've tried to explain it away in my head 1,000 times. Oh, well, you know, everyone's grieving and give them time. And then it just got to a place where I said, this feels like something else. I don't know why they're telling little lies, and little lies only exist to cover up bigger lies. Anyways, you guys, all of that, I also do want to add here, show you a clip before we get into some of your comments, that it's also very good to not extend to everyone that is Jewish the viewpoints of this very radical sect that has a lot of power in America. People like Josh Hammer don't get fired when they explicitly express that, you know, they hate white people, whatever. That's like, okay, on your resume. That's not the people, you know this, that you went to school with. Like, I grew up around the Dave Smiths of the world, right? And I always say I'm grateful that I did, because and when you engage into politics, what you see is so ugly that you just go, oh my gosh, like coming into stereotypes. You're living up every stereotype. But what you're seeing is the stranglehold of AIPAC. It is a political organization. And I always say, if you look at any lobby in D.C., it'll make you hate someone, right? Pharmaceutical lobby will make you hate the pharmaceutical companies. The Jewish lobby will make you hate Jews. The Black Caucus will make you hate Black people. And so people that go to D.C. are incredibly corrupt. Money rules them, and they become powerful. Power corrupts, absolutely. It's just good to remember that. And I found myself wanting to show you this joke. This is a comedian, John Marco Cerezzi, who is Jewish and just he's making fun. This is what comedians do, making fun of himself, makes everybody feel better. Just remember that there are people that are not like Josh Hammer. That's kind of the point I want to get across. Listen to this very funny joke by John Marco Cerezzi.
I celebrated most of the major Jewish holidays growing up. Passover was my favorite because you get to read it at the table. And then that's the story where the Jews, we were enslaved by the Pharaoh. And then Moses made the plagues happen. And then we escaped and we crossed the desert for 40 years. I liked it because it made Jews seem cool. But that was also kind of confusing because I was like, okay, how did we go from crossing the desert to now being known as generally frail? And I didn't understand until one day I went on vacation to Miami with my very Jewish girlfriend. And the moment we got to the beach, she was like, it's like a desert out here. And I was like, oh my God. What if Jews have been exaggerating this entire fucking time? We got stuck in traffic on the way there. My girlfriend was like, let my people go. The beach was a little crowded. She said, there's like 6 million people here.
Yeah, you got it.
That's fantastic. It's funny. And it's good to remind yourself that politics is serious all the time. But most of the people do not behave like psychopaths. And they're very funny and can make fun of themselves. All right, going to read a couple of sponsors before I get to your guys' comments. I want to tell you first and foremost about Home Title Lock, because if you are a homeowner, you need to listen to this. The FBI has been warning homeowners about a type of real estate fraud on the rise, which is title theft. This type of theft doesn't happen by breaking down your doors and stealing your stuff. It happens with just a one-page document, a forged signature, and it gets filed to the county. And if your title, which is a legal record of your ownership, gets transferred out of your name, criminals can use your ownership to drain your equity or even sell your property, and you won't even know about it until you start getting collection notices or foreclosure notices in the mail. That's why I've partnered with Home Title Lock so that you can protect your equity and find out today if you're already a victim. You can use my promo code Candace at HomeTitleLock.com, and you'll get a free title history report and a free trial of their $1 million triple lock protection. That's 24/7 monitoring of your title records, urgent alerts to any changes, and if fraud occurs, their U.S.-based restoration team will spend up to $1 million to fix it. Again, HomeTitleLock.com, promo code Candace. Also want to tell you guys about American Financing, because the cost of everything is still out of control. Many people are relying on credit cards to cover essentials. If that debt is piling up, you should know you're not alone. Americans collectively owe over $1 trillion in credit card debt. You might have considered reaching out to my friends at American Financing, but maybe hesitated because you didn't want to give up your low mortgage rate. Well, there is good news, because they've now created the Smart Equity Loan, which is a solution designed to help you take control of your finances without touching your current mortgage. Unlike a HELOC, which can have varied interest rates, the Smart Equity Loan offers a fixed rate, which means one predictable monthly payment. It'll give you peace of mind. The loan will allow you to leverage the equity in your home to pay off high interest debt, free up your cash flow, and keep your existing low mortgage rate intact. It only takes 10 minutes to get started with no upfront or hidden fees. So call American Financing and start saving now. Call 800-795-1210. That's 800-795-1210. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. Also want to tell you guys about Nimi Skincare, because there is a reason that we all love the fall. The crisp air, there's changing leaves, season of transition. But that transition is tough on our skin sometimes. The end of the summer sun, the new autumn wind can leave us feeling tired, dry, dull. If you're looking in the mirror and you're feeling like your skin has lost its radiance with the season, then I should tell you about my absolute go-to Nimi Skincare. Nimi is the reason that my skin stays clear, firm, glowing, no matter what the weather brings. Their three-step anti-aging routine is perfect, a perfect defense for the seasonal shift. It's packed with powerful, clinically backed ingredients that work to restore your skin's barrier, which is exactly what you need to fight off that dry autumn air. It boosts collagen production. It helps with those fine lines. It locks in deep moisture, and it brightens your complexion, bringing back that healthy glow that you had during the summer. And here's why I love Nimi most. It's proudly American-made in a world of skincare, which is dominated by a ton of foreign brands. Nimi formulates and produces everything right here in the USA. They deliver world-class quality while staying true to the values that we hold dear, faith, family, and freedom. You shouldn't have to compromise your values to get incredible skincare with Nimi, and you don't have to. So as you prepare for the new season, make sure your skin is prepared. Get an exclusive 10% off your order at NimiSkincare.com. Use code Candace10 at checkout. Again, NimiSkincare.com, promo code Candace10 at checkout for 10% off. All right, guys, what do you guys think? Are you giving Josh Hammer a charitable read? Do you think that he was inspired because there were people that were bringing up that old tweet? They, you know, always pull it. They always say there's a Trump tweet for everything, and then people will pass it around for certain situations. Do you think that that was is what he was doing in the context of what was going on that day, which was really the focus of his tweets seemed to be talking about Israel, as always, and going after Qatar and Tucker Carlson, as always. What are you guys thinking? Corey Henry, thank you for that donation. Hey, sister from another mother, hire more security. I fear for you now. Please stay safe. Prayers for you and yours. You are getting close. The phone call was them putting pressure on him. Wow, just wow. Corey, I will tell you, Charlie owned the security company. So that security company you see that's around him, he owned it. He actually outright purchased a security company, and it didn't matter. And they didn't do anything. It clearly was an act of vanity. They should never be allowed to work again, because why would you not have, I mean, he's a sitting duck. The amount that he was paying for that security, for them to not check rooftops, you could have someone actually requiring that you have access to rooftops. You could have one of your guys on a rooftop. Wouldn't that be a good idea? I don't know. I don't understand it. Kelly Gibbs writes, my Catholic bestie and I keep you in our prayers. Thank you, Kelly, for this gift. Rosary and divine mercy, I pray that our Lord and Lady protect you and your family, give you wisdom, and safeguard the pearl of great price, the faith passed down from the apostles. Thank you so much. It's such a sweet comment. Jose Cruz writes, Candace, I love you so much. May God bless you. Can you lightly please don't stop? A lot of love from Mexico. I'm not associated with Turning Point USA, and I'm not a liberal. Please don't tear apart Turning Point USA, because we need a movement for the youth. Please tread lightly. Make sure you have all the facts, because you are an important voice. Any youth movement must be based in truth. And like I said, Turning Point USA has fantastic people that worked and signed up to work for that company and dedicated their time with that company, whether even volunteers, people on college campuses, because they believed in truth and they knew they were getting it from Charlie. Right now, we are at a point. And I think John and Arena Mappin, in that beautiful letter they wrote yesterday, said it way more eloquently than I ever could. Which is, if you actually continue the legacy of Charlie, it means continuing to fight for truth. And to the extent that they do that, fantastic. They will have an ally in me. I never attacked Turning Point USA, because I came from Turning Point USA. And I saw what it took to build that company, because I was a part of building that company. But to the extent that we feel that they've become so corporate that they're not answering our questions or making us feel ashamed for asking these questions, or just like feeling like they don't care about getting to truth, I think it was very sloppy what Tyler Boyer did on X. He was accusatory. He called people names. To that extent, they won't survive. That is just a reality. I can't fix that, right? People will pick up on that. They will pick up on what feels like treachery. It will feel to them like a betrayal to Charlie Kirk's legacy, because that's how it feels to me, right? We're all feeling it together. That's the point. And so we offer this as a course correction for them. You know, I want to believe that they're just grieving in a weird way, that they have a ton of things on their plates. Maybe they're fearful for their own lives. I don't know. But if that were the truth, they could still get the truth out to other people. And that is something I want you to know that Charlie was remarkable at. And that's why I always defended Charlie, never took the bait on people saying he's this. Charlie was very good at knowing he's the guy they'll get in the room. He was happy to schmooze. He was a perfect diplomat and politician. And then he would call. And he'd call like Tucker or me and say, you hit this, you go hard, you do this. I mean, he was, as someone put it today, he was a maestro. He really was. He's like, that's the drum, you know, so we're going to need the bass. You're going to need to be the strings. I'm going to play this. And we're going to have a symphony. they're not working with the fighters. It feels like they're working with the feds. They've said explicitly they're working with the feds. So I don't know what to make of that. But I hear you. I hear you. And I feel the same way. I want Turning Point USA to survive, but I want them to be truthful first. Evie writes, thank you for that donation, Evie. It's giving Joey from Friends. Do they know that we know? No. Amazing work as always. Much love and support from Australia. And if anything, God forbid, happened to you, I promise we would all ride at dawn. Thank you. I know that you guys would all over the world. And I know that you wouldn't know, but you would know. No. You know what I mean? Like, we would know what happened. So there we go. Angela writes, follow the money. It never lies. Christ is king. Team Candace. Thank you, Angela. MJ Ramon writes, that's what's done in the dark will be exposed in the light. Absolutely. It is biblical. Angela Lewis writes, Mormon here. We love you, Candace. We just want truth and we are praying for you constantly. Yes. I do want to say shout out to the Mormon community for never accusing me of being anti-Utah or anti-Mormon. I don't know what. Anti-Latter-day Saints. Sorry, I know nothing about your faith. But you have been assisting and that's been amazing. And you want to know, like I want to know, like we all want to know. Kian Erb writes, I realized something beautiful. Charlie wanted you on stage, AmFest. They tried to stop him, but in doing so, he made sure that you had an even bigger stage. He knew pulling back the veil on the current spiritual warfare needed to be shown by you on a global stage. Rest in peace, Charlie. I feel that way. I do. I feel like everything that happened, and that's why I say I was always like his big sister, like it happened to me first. And it was very hurtful. It was hard. And Charlie, it was hurtful for him. Because you believe they're your friends. Like, I believed that. I believe they wanted my... I just took it. Like, I once retweeted Max Blumenthal, and they made me think I was, like, the worst human. And I took them at their word before I realized that it was much more sinister. And I'm grateful thus far that I did not pay any greater cost than them destroying my reputation and my name and trying to get me canceled everywhere. Dennis Domian writes, in times where deception grows, truth tellers matter most. Thank you, Candace. Your courage gives hope. Greetings from Croatia. Christ is King. I'll tell you a story. I used to live in Croatia for a couple of months, about 3 months, working on a wedding in Dubrovnik. Josie Ells writes, God bless you. We are rooting for you from Australia. I hope you're rooting for me to get into Australia. By uncovering the flaws in the U.S., you've opened our eyes to the demonism that we are under in our own government, too. I can't wait for them to approve your visa so that we can show you some Aussie love. Even that, you know, it's up to the Supreme Court or the High Court of Australia. And if it happens, even that was meant to be, because I still can't believe that I'm like banned from, I got banned from a country. Like, what am I doing that... My country, I wasn't even going to speak about Israel, like nothing. And yet the Zionist lobby rose up and like, she can't speak. I was going to speak about homeschooling and children and my backstory and race issues. And they were like, you can't come in. Okay, but you can still download my podcast on Spotify. I don't understand. Henry Love writes, the spiritual war. Thank you for being one of the warriors of light. Thank you, Henry. Rachel Ryder writes, I owe you an apology, Candace. As a former Dem, I am ashamed to admit that I've said some awful things about you. Wholly unwarranted that I deeply regret. You're a brilliant, honest voice in a choir of crooks and liars. We don't deserve you. God bless. You know what, Rachel? I'll apologize back because I was also partially blinded and I thought that it was just the left. You know, I was taking that low-hanging fruit of us warring against each other. And I've realized now, like, no, we're all actually fighting real evil and we're going to disagree along the way. You know, I don't think you should trans your children. I'm against it. I'm very against it. But I also am more interested in where all of these ideologies are coming from. I'm more interested in the war against family. I'm more interested in waking everybody up by actually being more charitable in our interpretations of one another and what motivates us and less charitable to the government, right? Because they know exactly what they're doing. And that's the real risk. That is the real threat to the government, is the left and the right actually uniting. In fact, they were like angry when they were randomly, you know, they've just been treating Megyn Kelly like a battered wife. I don't know. I say something, she gets beat. It's weird. But during that course of that, Constantine Kissin, when he was like, you need to make a statement against Candace and Tucker, somebody else was saying to her, Candace doesn't even hate the left anymore. Like, that was supposed to be a convincing argument for Megyn to trash me, like really trying to get us exist in that left-right paradigm, and it only serves them at the top. So I hope more of this, more realizing and more coming together on the stuff that we can agree on. Miracle Media lastly writes, Candace, as a Christian, you have the authority to fight any strife that comes your way. Recite and memorize Psalms 91, 121, 23, and I guarantee God's angels will protect your footsteps, your family from these evildoers. They are protection scriptures. Thank you so much for saying that. And we pray every day. We really do. But everything is in God's control. And we, I feel, are in a great period of revelation. And that is why we are also in a period of anxiety, because with that, the, you know, the demons commit further to their demonology, and we therefore have to commit more to truth. And yeah, that's basically all that I want to say today. You guys, I have some bad news here at the very end. I am going to take next week off. I'm going to take about 10 days off, actually. I'll give you more details about that tomorrow. But, you know, I just feel like I need to, I'm arriving at the acceptance phase. I will say the stages of grief is very real. And I just kind of want to take a little bit of time to really just kind of mourn Charlie in my own personal capacity, and just kind of recognize I'm never going to see him again. I'm never going to talk to him again. And to say kind of bye in my own way and take a break and a breather. And so nothing bad is happening to me. I will still be sending an occasional Instagram wave so that you guys know that I'm fine. But I wanted to let you know a heads up what's going on there. Anyways, if you would like to support our show, as many of you guys have, you can head to CandaceOwens.com. You can sign up. You can join our book club. You can buy our We Don't Know No, But We Know brand stuff. Join us in prison when Laura Loomer sends us for writing CIA in parody. And it's a parody because we don't want to be in the CIA. We think there's a lot of corruption there. Actually, I'm hoping one day my team will let me have the green hat. They never sent it to me. So hopefully if you know someone, somebody get me that green CIA hat, because it's actually, people are tagging me in it and I don't have it. And it's really nice. Other than that, you guys, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you tomorrow.